Welcome to the Beyond Barriers podcast. When women lead, share performance and profits go up 50%. Results are more powerful when everyone is empowered. This is the insight that brought the four founders of Beyond Barriers together. We came from a diverse set of leadership backgrounds with a common goal: to close the gender gap at work and expand economic opportunities for everyone. Tune in each week as one of us interviews inspiring guests who share stories and cutting-edge strategies that will help you learn what helped them go further faster.
I had to ask for all kinds of help. I needed a coach. I needed to do a 360. I needed to ask my team to let me know when I was not showing up the way that was most helpful and effective for them. So I think it's, you've got to remove your ego and realize that I think more people want to be there to support you and help you be successful. But if you pretend like you got it all figured out, then it's hard for anybody to feel like you want that support. I don't think people expect me to always have all the answers and to have it figured out. Even to this day, I often want a sanity check on something and I'll go to my boss, who, like, probably a lot of people, like, you think you have to be all buttoned up, but I'll ask for help and let's workshop this together, or help me. How would you think through this? Help me think about this. And I think that, again, we model it there and then you create the space for your team to be able to also be a bit vulnerable and then do that.
Get ready to immerse yourself in the art of building genuine virtual connections with Alyssa Merwin, Global Vice President of LinkedIn Sales Solutions. I'm your host, Brooke Skinner Ricketts, and today we are privileged to dive deep into Alyssa's extraordinary journey from her humble small-town roots to leading LinkedIn Sales Navigator business. With unwavering transparency, Alyssa unveils invaluable insights into overcoming challenges and embracing vulnerability as the driving forces behind substantial professional development. Stay tuned for a conversation that promises to reshape your leadership approach, redefine the way you ask for help, and revolutionize your ability to foster authentic connections in today's remote work landscape. Visit gobeyondbarriers.com, where you will find show notes and links to all of the resources in this episode, including the best way to get in touch with our special guests. Our conversation with Alyssa Merwin starts now.
Alyssa, thank you so much for taking the time. You've had such an incredible career journey, but you've also had a really interesting life journey. And I think that from what I understand, the two really inform each other. So I would love to hear just a little bit about your story as far back as you're willing to go and how your early days shaped your current state.
Thanks, Brooke. And thanks for giving me the space to share. And I hope it's relatable to a lot of folks. But my story does start at the end of a dirt road, actually. I'm the only child to two incredibly amazing and hardworking parents who really wanted everything for me. But growing up in a small town was limited in terms of my exposure and some of the opportunities. I remember working really hard in school because I wanted to make my parents proud. But we got to a point where I think together we realized that I'd really benefit from a stronger education than the local public school that I was in. I remember my parents digging really deep to be able to send me to a private school in the next town. I was about a year into that new school, and it was a good move from an educational standpoint, but it was, you know, it was hard in terms of the commute, and it was certainly a bit of a burden on our family. I actually won a scholarship that a year into attending that paid for all 4 years of my high school. It was a proud moment, although to be honest, I was also quite embarrassed because it reinforced this idea that I was not like the others and that I was on scholarship when most of the rest of the school was not. I remember I went to my parents as I graduated and I said to them, would you give me some of the money that I'd saved you so that I could travel the world and have an adventurous, different kind of educational opportunity? And they thought about it and they actually came back and said that they would. And that was a pretty cool moment to have my parents be so supportive. But I started to reflect and I realized that more important than having this adventure was actually giving back to my parents who had given so much to me. And so I went on to graduate college early and I started working so that I could make money and give back to them. And I share that because I've taken that as a leadership lesson since that day, that giving back to those that have given to me and supporting others is one of the most important things that I can do. And that's been the spirit of my leadership since then. That I do that today by mentoring, by, you know, making sure that we're hiring and looking at all different backgrounds and experiences and sponsoring others.
One of the interesting things that you described in that story is an experience that a lot of our community has had, which is the experience of being an other, right? And that can look like so many different shades, right? And in your case, it was being a scholarship student or living in the next town over. How has that informed your journey or your leadership? I know for a lot of us, that's a pretty sticky feeling.
It is. And you know what? I think that feeling of other shows up in so many different ways, depending on the environment we're in. And it can feel like one kind of other in one role and another kind of other in another role. And so I think it's looking at when that can be a real asset as well. And I that has been one of the things that I have found is, I guess it's fueled me a little bit. I like being an underdog. I think that that idea that I can maybe exceed someone's expectations or be more than what they thought I could, for me, has been fuel. And I think now I hope that it also serves as inspiration for others, knowing that we can break barriers together and we can show up and do amazing things. And I was reflecting on what are the things throughout my career that have enabled me to break barriers in certain cases. And I think we all have moments where we feel like we're not enough or we feel like we're different. I have found that in my case, that feeling of difference or otherness has meant that I've wanted to over prepare. It's meant I've had to work a little bit harder to show up well. Yeah. And I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Doing the extra cycles and the extra prep and the extra practice and really being intentional about how I show up in different situations. I remember early in my career being one of the few female leaders in certain rooms. I often felt intimidated to speak up and contribute in a meeting, especially large meetings. And so I started to think, what can I do to change this dynamic where I'm putting so much pressure on myself to say something important and insightful? And I would get so far into a meeting and realize I hadn't said anything. And then I'd felt so insecure about contributing that I might not say anything. And so I said, I've got to change this dynamic. And so I realized there were two things that I could do that I could control that would take a little bit of the pressure off. And so I decided to start sitting next to the person hosting the meeting. I would get an opportunity to smile, say hello, connect. And that just all of a sudden made me feel a little bit more comfortable. So rather than being on the other side of the room or sitting on the outside, I would try as elegantly as I could, just try to sit near the person hosting. That was one. And then the second was forcing myself to say something in the first 5 minutes. It also then took a lot of pressure off needing to feel like it was the most important contribution of the meeting. And then if I didn't put so much pressure at the rest. So I think there are those little things that we can do to think about how can I take a little bit more ownership and agency in creating an environment that I can show up as a better version of myself.
Those are just, I love how tangible and specific, and they're so helpful. I think we work with so many professionals who do work twice as hard to go half as far, right? We feel like it, and often we are. And sometimes it's like decoding. Right. I'm first generation corporate. I'm first generation college. I was taught to keep my head down and work really hard. And I think so unlearning a lot of things. But I love just the simplicity of sitting next to the host and saying, so those are just really, I could see how those would have a ripple effect both for you and others in the room. That's really cool.
And I think there's also an element of what are those stories we tell ourselves? And I know that, again, in certain situations, there are additional hurdles and there are challenges. I'm 5'0", so I'm like rather on the petite side. For earlier part of my career, I felt like I looked very young and I was meeting with very senior executives. And so I always felt like I was underappreciated, but there weren't high expectations. And so I actually felt like that was an advantage because I didn't look the part. It gave me an opportunity to show up as much more impressive than people were maybe expecting. And again, that came through hard work and preparation and making sure I knew what I was going to be impactful in those conversations. But It almost gave me an opportunity to be surprising in a way. That was a story that I told myself is because I'm not having to live up to some big expectation. I actually get to an opportunity to show up stronger and exceed someone's expectations. And so I found that to be an empowering story to tell myself.
And those stories we tell ourselves, man, they matter. That's so helpful. Thank you. When you started on your journey, did you always envision yourself as a leader?
Wow. Did I always? Probably not. One of the reasons I fell into sales by accident, I think a lot of people do. I thought I was going into consulting and ended up in the entry level role, which was scheduling appointments for the sales executives. And so what I realized is, gosh, this is an incredible career because your income is so directly related to your amount of hustle and willingness to learn and grow. And I loved that. And I also got paid to travel the world in a sales role. It was so amazing. And I really value the opportunity to get to have a really amazing career and make the most of the travel that I was doing. And that was just such an amazing part of my, that early part of my career. But I think as in many roles, as you learn to be more competent and capable, you have an opportunity to either formally or informally mentor and coach others. And that was happening as I was performing and continuing to really deliver and exceed my goals. I'd get asked either by another leader or by individuals who were more junior to coach and mentor. And so I had the opportunity to stretch those muscles and try on leadership in different ways. In the early part of my career, I just focused on, I want to be the best sales executive I can be. I want to earn a lot of money. I want to have this great work-life thing. And then I think like many people, you get to a point where you get less gratification from that part of it and a lot more from helping others. And so there was this moment where it was like, there's probably more to my career and to, again, this idea of giving back to others that I could do more formally rather than informally. And so it happened a little bit more organically. So I guess that was a long way of saying, I don't think I started out saying I'm going into leadership. I actually started out saying, I want to have a career where it can make a good amount of money and give back and that I really enjoy it.
That's great. Did you have mentors or people that you looked up to or people who brought you under their wing along the way?
Oh, of course. I don't know how any of us can thrive without those people that bring us along. I'm a big learn through observation person. I realized that early that I improved most when I could see other people modeling. And so in sales, it was really helpful to be able to sit in on customer meetings and observe how someone would navigate. Or as I got into leadership, actually being a real student to observe how other leaders were leading. And you learn quickly things that you would absolutely not want to replicate and the kind of leader you would not want to be, as well as what the very best do. And so you pick and choose those various aspects as you think about, how do I want to show up in the world and what kind of leader do I want to be? And you have, I think, those mentors and coaches along the way that if they really care, also give you the real talk and they give you the tough feedback. And that's as valuable as the people that sponsor you. And I've had all of those.
Any particular lessons that like stand out? I know I have, there's one mentor who I quote for at least 3 times a week. She just had all these amazing things. And now they're the things that I say and probably people who reported to me say them too. But are there lessons that you learn that you share a lot from others?
Yes, there are a lot of lessons along the way, right? There are a lot. Even this week, there are things that I wish I had done differently. And
yeah,
I think we're all works in progress is one thing that a motto that I always keep front and center to give myself a little bit of grace and everyone else. But I think there are a couple of really poignant moments in my career that changed both. They were really pivotal in changing how I was showing up. And also tend to be the lessons that I come back to most often for myself and hopefully can impart to others. One of them is thinking about, as you're thinking through career decisions, right? We're often trying to make a decision about, is this job opportunity the right one for me? How do I weigh the pros and cons and think through all of the elements that are often really hard to parse through what the right decision is? And I remember when I was coming to LinkedIn, I was about 9 years into my prior company, my run at my prior company, and had this incredible time of growth and learning and progression. And I was in a relatively big job for my age and stage of my career at that time. And I remember there was an opportunity to join LinkedIn, and the hiring leader was really trying to be incredibly thoughtful and impartial in helping me make the right decision for my career. And he was doing such a beautiful job of really trying to be objective and helping me think through. And the thing that he shared that was so helpful, as I had shared, here are all the reasons that make sense for me to stay at the company I'm at. And here are the things that I think might be interesting if I were to come on board at LinkedIn. And he said, Melissa, I think the most helpful frame in the situation is for you to think about your time horizon. How are you thinking about optimizing for time? Because if you are going to be optimizing for the next couple of years, based on everything you've shared, it sounds like you should probably stay where you are. So if that's like, how often do we have people that are just so focused on what's right for you that they're willing to say that? And he said, like, the scope is bigger, the compensation is better, and even some of the near-term progression opportunities are probably better. Like, if that is your time horizon, you really want to think about the next couple of years, that might be the right decision for you. He said, if on the other hand, you think that you're really optimizing for the sort of longer arc of your career and you're willing to take that longer lens view, then it sounds, based on what we've talked about, like this might be, it's uncertain,
yeah.
But it might be, it sounds like there might be more learning and more opportunities for growth and progression. Like we can't map them out, but it sounds like there may be a little bit more to stretch you over time. And that was a really clarifying, I think, question and frame for me. And I've gone on to share that with a lot of people, and it served me so well in so many subsequent decisions I've made across my career.
Yeah. No, what an amazing, you said model the behavior, which is something I say a lot too. Just what a powerful model, right, that he put out there. One of the members that I've worked with had someone more senior than her pull her aside and say, I see that you're connected with these 10 people, but they're not the people that you need to get to next, right? So, and then he gave her a list, right? Which again, like these are gifts. Like, these are moments where you're like, oh my gosh, this person's really imparting, and it's on us to receive it however we want. But what an incredible person is he? Have you gotten to work with that person since?
That's, well, I went on to work for him for many years, and continues to be a mentor both in work and life, and someone I just have so much respect and admiration for.
That's awesome. That's amazing. It sounds like you stumbled into sales, and it's become this career where it seems like you found great purpose and great connection. How did you build your way there? If you stumbled in, how did this become your career, right? From a job to your career? And then how have you built your personal brand, both as a leader and a sales leader?
Well, I did stumble into it, as I shared. I think that when I learned something also about myself that was surprising. So I was a competitive tennis player when I was young, growing up, but I was actually not. I was a good player, but I actually did not perform well in matches. And I realized that I really was a head case. I was like, I would be up, I'd be winning. And then when I realized I was winning by so much, I would completely fall apart and I would lose the match. And I thought that I was not a competitive person. And so it was just like this interesting thing of maybe one-on-one sports, individual sports are not my thing. And when I got into sales, I think a lot of people think about sales as a really individual career, but I actually found it to be anything but. I think you only win in sales, such a difficult space to be in because you have to be so resilient and there's so many rejections and it's the ups and downs that you navigate all the time, by the way, just like with leadership in any function. But what I learned in the early part of that sales career when I started out as a business development rep was that I was actually hyper competitive in that environment where I was part of a team, even though my individual performance was dictated by what I contributed. What I realized was different was that it wasn't a zero sum game. So we could actually all be successful. So I could hit my goals and so could everyone else. Now, I still wanted to maybe be like the top, but it didn't mean that someone else was losing. And so that was really an important moment of recognizing that I thrived in an environment of camaraderie, of support, of like healthy competition. And I think that that's part of what I've also been able to bring into my role as a leader. The best part of the job, I think, is getting to work on hard, challenging problems with amazing people. And we get to do it together and we get to drive impact for our teams and the people that we have the opportunity to lead and support. I mean, we get to do it for the companies we work for and for the customers we support. So I just find it really energizing. And I think that learning that about myself was actually a really important part of the process because I wouldn't have expected that sales would have been such a team sport.
Mm-hmm.
And leadership too. It can be lonely at times, but most of the time, if done well and you've built the right team around you, it's actually, you can get through the hardest things because you're doing it with other great people.
And that's, I think, the uniqueness of sales and revenue generating roles in terms of the ups and downs and the resilience required. That's something that I've spoken at length with our mutual friend about, right? And how do different groups of people experience this differently, right? And so as an example, we work with a lot of different kinds of professionals, but we work with a lot of women who talk about how like they'll take something that happened at work on a Friday and it'll sit heavy on their chest all weekend long. And then they come in and they talk to their partner who's like, hey, who's, yeah, I went and had a beer and it was gone. And I had a great weekend. What are you looking great? And so I think the ups and downs in particular, right? How do you coach and mentor lead folks through that? How do you teach that resilience that obviously if you've gotten to your point in your career, you've probably mastered, right?
I don't know if we ever master that, but I think you learn to navigate it and deal with it more effectively. I think the hardest days, and I still have them, are the days where I feel like I've not shown up as my best self and I could have done things better. And by the way, like I have those all the time. I think there are two things that I've found to be really helpful, though, even in those moments. The first is some advice that a former CRO shared, and it was that you really have to detach yourself a little bit. If you believe fully and strongly in something, you have to not be afraid of the implications of saying the thing.
Right.
And really be okay that one of those implications might be that it impacts your job.
Yeah.
Might impact how you're perceived. And so I think that was sort of permission to not be apologetic about my case. Sometimes I have a high bar and sometimes I'm very direct with feedback or sharing a perspective or holding others to that bar. I try to be clear and kind. And sometimes people have different thresholds for what they're comfortable with. But I try to be consistent. And so I think that is one piece of advice that I've found helpful because it helps me to show up as my best self and be a little bit less attached to feeling like I always have to be perfect, but also that it's okay to say the hard things if I truly believe that's the right thing. And so that's one. The other, and this is like a totally different part of this whole challenge of navigating like work and life and turning off, is I try to have very bright lines around boundaries. Mm. And I do that both because it's important for my own health and well-being and family happiness, but also because I am a model for, I want to model for others what I believe we all need to be doing. And I think if as the leader, you blur boundaries, and I'll give you a couple examples. Like I have gotten back into tennis after not playing for 20 years. And so I do that before work a couple of times a week. And I do not take meetings before 9 a.m. because that is my time to do the thing that helps me. We call it our mom therapy, get into a good space and, you know, create like that. I can show up better for myself. I work for a West Coast based company. I live on the East Coast. I don't take calls after 5 p.m. unless it's on an exception basis. And by the way, I'm in a global role. And so There are lots of times that I could work all hours around the clock, but that doesn't model the right kind of work-life dynamic that I want for the people on my team. So I try to really hold true to that. And of course, make exceptions and all of the things that we need to. But I feel like I give 150% every minute of every day that I'm working. And then I want to do the same thing for my family. And I want to make sure that everyone knows that's okay for them to do as well. So those are two things that I've found to be helpful.
Yeah, that's so important. And I think starting that, once you get into that rhythm of those boundaries, it gets easier. But I think for so many people, setting those boundaries the first time is really hard, right?
Well, and actually, let's talk about this too, because I think it's important. There are times in your career when you can do it. And I think the early part of my career was not the time to be so rigid on those boundaries, because this was like, you're in the real learning mode. You're proving yourself. As a sales exec, you're hustling. There is no amount, like you never get to a place where you can turn off. I think that, the other side of that advice is I do think that you have to be really conscious of, am I in a place in my career where I can get done what I need to in this amount of time. And I've got the people and the support around me and we can collectively get the work done. And other times, and by the way, there are times in this job all the time where I have to break some of those little rules because there are things you're dealing with. But again, just being conscious of there are like different modes for different ways of working and different times you can be a little bit more rigid about those boundaries than others.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it is what we do. I had my mentor, who I quote all the time. She at one point was like, you have to stop throwing your toys. It's like, what do you mean? And she's, everything you do, it has a ripple effect. So if you need to recover, you can come in here, like you have to recover in private now, right? Or recover with someone, say like another leader, you can recover with me, but you can't do it out there. And it was it's that lesson of we model everything that we do models, right? So whether it's setting boundaries around physical health, which feeds mental health, which feeds performance, which feeds all of the things, right? So how powerful for your team that you're leading that way.
Yeah, I'll share one other. I had a little baby boy 3 years ago, and I remember going on maternity leave, and we had lovely, like a very generous leave policy. And I felt like I was probably ready to come back a little bit sooner, but I actually thought it was really important from a modeling. The last thing I wanted was for my team to feel like I couldn't be away, or that I was so important that I needed to get back, or that I didn't feel like I could take the full leave time of leave. And so I think just those little decisions that talk about ripple effects. I want every parent to feel like they can take and should do. You should do whatever's right for you. But as a leader, I do think about just what's the signal it sends.
It's so important. I used to do executive, well, I would dial in on mute to executive meetings from the mother's room. But I had a lot of other people say that really was meaningful, that it wasn't like I was talking, actively participating, but I was there, but it was like just a part of my day. And it's so powerful, especially for working parents who are caring so much, and also for non-working parents who might be considering becoming working parents, right? Like, it all resonates.
What if you knew exactly where to focus to go further, faster? Imagine having clarity on your strengths and barriers and the ability to take action and gain unstoppable momentum to deliver results and advance. Take the Beyond Barriers Momentum Metric quiz to get a personalized report on the 5 C's, core categories used to measure and accelerate success. Visit gobeyondbarriers.com/quiz to get your report today.
How do you overcome failures and setbacks? And can you, like, here, I would love it if you're comfortable sharing an example of a time when something came up and how you overcame either a fear or a setback.
I shared a little bit of my journey into LinkedIn and the incredible support that I had with this hiring manager and making that decision. So I obviously ultimately decided to come to LinkedIn. It was the best decision I'd ever, career-wise, I'd ever made. And I was leaving behind 9 years of brand equity and relationships and all of those things, reputational equity and a track record of success, coming to a company where I didn't know anyone. I had none of those things. And I came in thinking, here I am, I've got this great sales management experience. And I took a huge step back, by the way, to come to LinkedIn, like on every dimension. And I was like, I could do this job in my sleep. So I come into the role, I meet the team, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna bring all the things I knew about how to be a good sales manager to LinkedIn. And this was like early days, pre-IPO, we were small and scrappy and figuring it out. And I was like, I've got so much that I can bring to this team. And I thought things were going super well. And I was introducing some new ideas, introducing more rigor, really focusing on performance and productivity. And my manager came to town and we spent a little bit of time with the team. And towards the end of our time together, he pulled me aside and said, hey, Alyssa, I need to share something with you. He said, there are teams where they would go into battle for their leader. Your team would not go into battle for you. And you can imagine, it was like a real gut punch moment of here. I thought I was like, my perception of how things were going couldn't have been further from the reality that my team was experiencing. And that actually, the hard part was, it wasn't just my team. It was also some of the other really senior leaders in the office that had been at LinkedIn for a while. And so I had this moment of, oh my gosh, I just left this incredible company and career and where none of this was a question mark. And I'm failing at this new opportunity. I was like, oh my gosh, I like had a crisis of confidence in every way you can imagine. I was like, did I choose the wrong company? Did I choose the wrong career? Can I be successful? Do I need to just reevaluate everything? And it was a really hard moment. And I spent a number of days just like wallowing in like a deep, dark place. And I remember, so he reached out to me, gave me a little bit of space, but he reached out to me a day or two later and he said, hey, Alyssa, I want to let you know that high performers take feedback the hardest, but they also bounce back the fastest. And it was like the permission that I needed to sit in the like real pain of it, but also permission to say, okay, I'm going to figure this out and I'm going to dust myself off and I'm going to do what I can to try to climb my way out of this like bad place I've been. And so I had to do a lot of self-reflection, like why was this the experience my team was having? How was I showing up? And there were some big themes here. I was focused too much on the business and the performance and not enough on having built trust and relationships. I was so focused on being effective as a manager that I was probably not bringing, I wasn't like letting them get to know me and connecting on a human level. And there's like all these things that we know today about how important it is to be a connected, authentic leader that people get to see and experience and get to know differently. And that vulnerability and all of those things that I just didn't appreciate and hadn't thought about until that moment. And so that was one of arguably the most important. I thought I might get fired. I probably wasn't too far from that at that point, that this wasn't going to work out. But being willing to like do all of the reflection on what was I doing, like owning that was really important. And then took time to build back. But I had open conversations with the team about the feedback I received and the role that I thought I was playing in it and how I wanted to get better and improve. And over time, like that worked through it. But that has been the probably most transformative in terms of, you know, who I am as a leader today. So that's one.
Thank you, Siri.
Yeah. I'll share just a quick one from this week, but I think it's so indicative of, listen, we're such works in progress and we're never like, we can always do better. I was in a meeting earlier this week and we were planning an offsite, and I was a little too vocal and directive amongst a team of people that were peers, and realized that I was bulldozing the conversation and had, I think, created a little bit of friction. And so I had this moment where I was like, oh my gosh, I'm being such a jerk. And I tried to get through that meeting productively and keep my emotions in check, even though inside I was like, I'm such a jerk. I did not show up well. That was not my best self. So I got through the meeting, gave myself a couple minutes to get composed, and then I picked up the phone and I left a voice note for a couple of the people, and I just owned it. And I said, hey, that was not how I meant to show up, not my intention. I'll do better. And I think just that the lesson there is just that no matter what role you're in or how senior you are, I think there are always opportunities for us to take responsibility and think about how can I do this better. And in my case, I prefer to over communicate in those moments, because that's just like my truth.
Right. Oh man, those are both such powerful examples. Thank you. And thanks for bringing up too that we're all works in progress and it's constant growth. I think it's interesting with these conversations, and we started Beyond Barriers, we all had kind of big corporate careers and then decided it was time to build. But I think a lot of people, like, there's so many assumptions, like you have it all figured out. You have it all, like just all of those hyperbolic nothing burgers, right? that chase us all around. And so it's like, one, it's really powerful to hear how formative that early experience at LinkedIn was for you. But then also that I think, in this transactional Zoom world, right, we're less and less together, that you can call somebody up and just say, hey, look, that wasn't, because we don't have those casual moments anymore, right, where you're walking down the hall with somebody or where you're going to get a coffee and they happen to be there. So I think it's so important that we're more intentional about that these days. So it's awesome that you're modeling that. So
yeah, you know, and I think you brought up such an important point. We're having to learn to interact and engage and lead differently in this virtual or hybrid world. And I'm a big fan of different mediums of communication and connection. And so I love to leave voice notes. Probably a little known fact is that you can actually leave voice notes on, like, through LinkedIn instead of sending an email. You can send a voice note. And so whether it's through Teams or through little emails or texts, I love to use all of those modalities, celebrating someone's birthday or anniversary or a big deal or a win. I just think those little touch points in this environment that we're in are so important to helping people feel seen and connected and all of those things. So I think that's something that we can all do better, is it's like, what are we doing outside of the Zoom meetings to make sure that we are still creating those moments of connection and being seen?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And it's interesting too, because we work with there's a whole generation of people who came into work without that, right? And so it's awkward, you know, so to learn how to do that. So I think the more effusive we can be, the better. Okay, so this is something that we tend to ask everybody, and I'm just curious about your approach. When we think about goal setting, like, how do you set goals? How do you achieve goals? How do you keep yourself on track?
Well, I'm a blue sky thinker and someone that to set super ambitious, sort of unimaginable goals. And really practically, I write them down. Like, I get a piece of paper and I get a pen and I write them down, and I often will put them in a drawer and not look at them again. But I remember reading a book about goal setting early in my sales career. And that was the lesson, is that there's something different that when you have that intentionality and you actually go from what's in my head to what's on paper, it's a different level of I think, connecting to what it is that you want to make happen. And I remember thinking, okay, that's a little bit, okay, fine. But I did it. And I remember I put it in a drawer, and I think one of those stories where, like, years later, I found the paper and were like, all the things, including like climbing Kilimanjaro that I'd forgotten I put down as a goal, had happened. And things that were just so amazing that because I was so clear in my head about what I wanted, I had no idea how it would happen. But I love the universe conspires to help you achieve the things that you're clear that you want to achieve in life and do.
Yeah. It's interesting because we have so many, we often talk about the stat that 92% of people don't achieve their goals. And usually it's because we don't plan and estimate and all of those reasons. But all so many of these conversations we've had, everybody talks about writing them down. Some people like carry, they have a book they carry with them. I worked with one sales leader who she talked about, she was a single mom and she'd just gotten a sales role. And like, how did you, and she exceeded everything right on her first year. And she's, well, I went home and I took out a roll of wrapping paper and put it on my desk. And she basically like made her own Gantt chart of the intent, right? And there is something about not only the manifestation, like putting it out there, but I think physically writing it down changes the game for a lot of people. So
it does. And also realizing I also had plenty of times where I've written down goals and I didn't achieve them, or I didn't achieve them in the timeline. And it didn't all turn out exactly as I planned. I went through a divorce. There were years where I missed my number. There were years I didn't get the promotion, all of those things. And just in the moment can be so much different than what you intended, or feeling like you're not living up to your other people's expectations. But then there are times when you like zoom out and you're like, wow, it's like all been part of the journey. And sometimes we just also need to adjust the goals for what's going on. And that's okay too.
Yeah. No, we do Thankful Thursdays. And yesterday we had a year that we didn't plan on having in 2023. But the thing we all talked about was how grateful we were for all the challenges. Because it got us here, right? And it's so hard to see when you're in it because you're just stewing about what you thought was going to happen. But my mom used to say all the time, which super annoyed me, but hard things make us grow, right?
Totally. I feel like the hard things right now are creating so much clarity. That's how I feel right now. I've been at LinkedIn for, I just made 13 year anniversary. I've been in this global role for 2 years. I think I just figured out like what this job is like a month ago. It's taken me 2 years to feel somewhat confident and confident in this role. And man, it's been a hard time to step into the biggest job of my life and to be one of the most senior leaders at a company in this kind of environment. And I've never been more clear on what we need to do, what the opportunities are, what the challenges are. And I wouldn't have had that clarity if things had been easy.
So speaking of easy and hard, one of the things that a lot of people struggle with is asking for help. So how have you cultivated that? I mean, you don't get to where you are without help, right? So how do you ask for help? How do you think about that? How do you teach others how to ask for help?
Yes, I think that's been such a through line of my career is I often don't have the answers. So first of all, I think for me, the only way I get to a good idea or clarity on a strategy or whatever it is actually doing with other people. So that's also just something I know about myself is I do better when I have people around and we can brainstorm and think through things out loud and ideally with a whiteboard or a virtual version. And so that to me is also help, right? I know I'm better when I am with other people than when I am by myself trying to come up with all the answers. So that's one way is like, what do we characterize as help? I mean, there are also times when we're struggling. And as I shared in that story from earlier in my career at LinkedIn, being willing to say, like, I am struggling and I don't know how to find my way out. Like, I had to ask for all kinds of help. I needed a coach. I needed to do a 360. I needed to ask my team to let me know when I was not showing up the way that was most helpful and effective for them. So I think you've got to remove your ego and realize that I think more people want to be there to support you and help you be successful. But if you pretend like you got it all figured out, then it's hard for anybody to feel like you want that support. And so I've always been more in the camp of, I'm going to be like, especially after that feedback session, I was like, I'm just going to put it all out there and I'm going to let people know, just, I'm not going to apologize. I don't think people expect me to always have all the answers and to have it figured out. And so even to this day, I often want a sanity check on something and I'll go to my boss who like probably a lot of people like, you think you have to be all buttoned up, but I'll ask for help and let's workshop this together or help me. How would you think through this? Help me think about this. And I think that, again, we model it there and then you create the space for your team to be able to also be a bit vulnerable and then do that together.
So great. Thank you. All right. I'm going to jump into the lightning round questions. So the first one here is what book has greatly influenced you?
There are a lot of books. I'm going to talk about one that I read when I was a precocious, 12, 13 year old that my parents gave me. And it was Tony Robbins, Awaken the Giant Within. And I just found that to be like an incredibly empowering book about charting your own destiny and getting clear on what you want to make happen in life.
And do you have an inspiring quote or saying that you carry with you?
Yes. So this is from Helen Keller, I believe. And it's something I've just taken throughout my life, which is life is a daring adventure or nothing at all.
That's fantastic. Thank you for sharing. I hadn't heard that one before. And then do you have a word or a moniker that you use to describe yourself?
I think I just want to bring energy and impact to others. I don't know. That's how I think about how can I just create space and create those feelings when I'm with people, whether it's work or life.
What's one change that you've implemented that made your life better?
One of the biggest changes and came from this same person that we were talking about that gave me that tough feedback. We were talking about two years ago, as I was about to start into this role. And I was comparing should I be doing more? Am I living up to my potential? How do I think about what I'm doing compared to everyone else? And I had this moment where it was like, if you just let go of your ego and just focus on who are you trying to prove and what left do you need to prove to yourself or anyone else? And what if instead of focusing so much on that, you started to think about how you could be the best mother, friend, wife, partner, colleague? And so there was this moment of separating my identity from my job was one of the most freeing. I still care a lot about it, of course, but it doesn't define me in the way that it did for the first 20 years of my career. And that has probably been the most freeing thing and moment that I've had.
It's interesting. You're not the first person to describe it as I don't have anything left to prove here, right? And then then we give ourselves permission to find the rest of life. And my wish for our kids, right, is that they're able to integrate early, because I had a similar experience and we hear it a lot. So, but it's a beautiful awakening when that happens. So I'm happy for you. And last one, this is my favorite. What's your walk-up song when you come on stage?
We used to laugh because there was like this terrible, I don't know if it was NSYNC. I didn't even remember that. It was like some obscure song that I used to have as like my walk-up. It was so obscure, I like don't remember it. But let me see. I'm sure we can come up with something.
Do you have a song you listen to around the house?
Recently, I've been like really into Taylor Swift's just the station. I remember when I used to play tennis, the Eye of the Tiger would always be blasting on the baseball field. And that got me excited. Like it got me going.
That's a great one.
Right?
I could totally see that. Yeah.
If that's not too cliche, we could.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. No, there's nothing too cliche. This is all just about what lights you fire. So that's
okay. Awesome. All right. Should we try it again?
Yep. Okay, what's your last one? What's your walk-up song?
My walk-up song is Eye of the Tiger.
Excellent. Wonderful. All right, well, this has been such a treat, and I learned so much about you, and I want to take you out for a drink to talk like the level two of everything we talked about, because I have lots to share, and I do hope we get the opportunity to get to know each other better, because this has been such a treat, and I know our listeners will really take a lot of value from this conversation. So just thank you again for spending your time with us, and we look forward to more soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Brooke. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Beyond Barriers podcast. There are thousands of podcasts out there, and we are so grateful that you've chosen to listen to ours. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating and tell a friend, or share what you've learned on LinkedIn and tag us. We love hearing from our audience. Visit us at gobeyondbarriers.com, where you can subscribe and find show notes, links, and the best way to connect with our guests.